Like to call to order the Personnel Legislative and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting for October 10th, 2017, 6:30 p.m. agenda. We have notice of the Open Meetings Act on the back on the door. Prior to starting, a copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Fowler.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Jab.
Yes, here.
And Fred Conley.
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So move.
A motion and a second. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Jab.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Aye. Item number five, we have proof of publication of tonight's meeting, which will be added to the final minutes. Item number six, review and recommendation of 2017 market analysis of district job descriptions. John Winkler, Jean Tate, and Ashley. I won't try to pronounce your last name, Ashley.
Tamale.
Okay.
Good evening. At the May 2017 Board of Directors meeting, Ashley and I provided an update on the 2017 market analysis of district job descriptions and briefed at that time that we would bring forward a recommendation to the subcommittee in October. The market analysis consisted of researching district job descriptions with current labor market data, reviewing the impact of time and service pay grade increases, making a determination of where the existing compensation stands in relation to what is trending in the existing job market. The results of the analysis reflected a need to reevaluate the district's length of service policy, update the existing pay structure by adding two more pay grades in order to accommodate the current job market, reassess the pay grade increments, and assign jobs to the recommended pay grades. Ashley, John, and I have met several times in the past several months to finalize a recommendation for the subcommittee's consideration, and the recommendation is to eliminate the length of service pay grade increases at the 15 and 25-year mark effective December 31st of 2017, eliminate the length of service pay grade increases at the 7-year mark effective December 31st, 2020. Increase the pay structure to 17 pay grades and adjust the pay grade increment to 10% between existing pay grades. And finally, to assign job titles to the updated pay structure. Upon approval of the 2017 market analysis, recommended changes will be incorporated in the district's 2018 pay program administration manual and brought to the PLPA subcommittee at the December 17 meeting for consideration and approval. Our recommendation is that the subcommittee recommend to the Board of Directors that the 2017 market analysis be approved. And we would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Any directors, questions? John?
I've got a question. When you look at the fact that we have 10% between grades, and we have so many grades, that looks like a mighty wide spread between the upper pay grade and lower pay grade. Is this typical in the market?
It is consistent. It is typical to have a consistent, what we call midpoint differential, so the progression from one midpoint to the next. Currently, there's a consistent dollar figure from one pay grade to the next. What we're looking to do is align that with best practice and have that consistent percentage rather than a consistent dollar figure. The purpose of doing that is to avoid compression. So actually, it's better to have more of an increase at the upper pay grades in between those midpoints. So that way you have you can have a wider difference in pay from employee pay to the supervisor or manager that's supervising that position. So it is typical practice to have more of a consistent percentage increase from one increment to the next.
But where I was headed with my question, maybe I didn't make it clear, was that from the lowest grade to the highest grade, there's, 17 increments?
There are 17 pay grades.
So that means 170%. without compounding, at least 170% between the lowest and the highest. Is that reasonable in the market?
Yes, that is reasonable. And we actually did add two pay grades because of the market data, suggesting that there was not a pay range high enough for one of the positions. So that was the reason for adding 16 and 17.
Okay. Remember, the original proposal had 22, and we eliminated that. The current has 15, and so you're seeing pay differentials anywhere from 25% to 30% in the lower ones, in the lower grades, compared to
only about 6%.
6% at the upper grade. So it's skewed heavily.
So we're trying to smooth that out, essentially.
Right
now, the average increment is 11. And so we're trying to smooth all of that out to have the consistent percentage.
Okay.
Director Jett.
I've got a whole lot of questions, and so I'm not sure how many to address at this point without giving somebody else a chance to do this. But first of all, has there been unrest or a lot of complaints regarding the current system? So why are we doing it? If it's not broken, why are we trying? What are we trying to fix here?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what we're trying to accomplish with the update is making sure that jobs are placed into a pay grade that's more in line with their market rate. There are some positions that are no longer in line with market, so ensuring that they are in line with market will help.
They're too high, or they're too low, or what?
Some of each.
So do we know what the individual jobs are and where they will fit into this particular pay scale and pay grade, and how many people are higher, how many people are lower than what they used to be? Do we know that?
We do. There are 68% of jobs would have a higher pay range max. So there are a number of jobs that are currently below market where they're at in the current ranges. And then 80% of employees would have room for a merit increase if their job grade changed to the new structure.
How many, you said?
80% of employees.
Would
be able to have a merit increase in the new pay scale.
And then looking at the various things that you surveyed here, are we considered a $50 to $200 million a year company? Is that, I see the primarily what we're seeing is that type of thing?
So with the market analysis results, what we do is we look at the labor market where you would essentially try to attract and retain talent who you're trying to compete against. So we look at the different scope factors, so the number of employees, the annual revenue, and then we compile survey data from the data cuts in those surveys that most closely align with the district.
And so are we, when you figured our company, were we a $70.5 million company, is that it? Or what did you use for our numbers?
That was the revenue. Yes,
that's our budget, but we don't spend that much. So if we spend $40 million, it's not really a $70 million company, is it?
But we've got over $150 or $60 million in capital assets and a $62 billion valuation that covers six counties. So it's how, you know, how you dice it up, but we'd be probably Fortune 1000, I guess.
Are any of the other companies you surveyed, were they government agencies or were they?
Yes, they were included. We selected data from an all industries labor market, so that would encompass those. Yeah.
And when you're talking about total compensation on one of your charts, does that include health insurance, retirement contributions,
that
or sick pays and paid vacations, anything?
Yes, total cash compensation.
Do you take that into consideration at all, health insurance? Nothing.
The market data does not take into consideration benefits, and so not it doesn't include health insurance. But when we look at where you want to target in relation to the market, that is something you can take into consideration is, do you want to position yourself higher or lower in the market, taking into consideration the other factors, other perks, benefits that you have available to them.
And one more thing, and then let somebody else talk. But are you advocating bonuses? Also?
No, we are not. We focus on base pay in the market now.
Ashley, could you explain that bonus line?
Sure.
It kind of has confused people that work.
Yeah.
You give bonus.
So the annual bonus, that is the number that individuals are receiving. So some of our service sources report bonuses, some of them do not. And then some organizations obviously provide bonuses, some do not. And so the information presented in the annual bonus column, that just represents individuals who did receive a bonus, so it does not include other people who may have been bonus eligible in the year but did not receive a bonus. So really the bonus information can be quite variable in the market analysis. So that's why we focus more on the base pay component rather than the bonus percentages or those bonus dollars in total compensation. So it's really more on the base pay is where we, that's what we based our placement in the pay grade on.
Okay, I have other questions, but I'd like to have somebody else go ahead. And...
Tim?
This overall affect our budget. We budgeted already forward for what we're doing now. How is this going to affect it in the forward? And forward, if we change our structure, is this going to go up further, and what's the percentage rate?
It shouldn't go up further, no, because you're still looking at employees having that same general, you know, 3% merit increase. It just means that they have greater potential, so some may not max out in the range as fast as they would otherwise.
This isn't a system that you see where we could just come to the board and say, okay, this year we're going to give everybody 2% increase. Or everybody a 2.5% increase, and no matter how you perform or what type of employee you are, you will get that increase. So what we've attempted to do over the years is turn it into more of a merit-based system. And that allows, and then the board approved that I can give an additional 1% to those employees that consistently exceed expectations. And this also allows for that merit-based increase. So you're going to have to be rated by your supervisor and agreed to by me to get those 3%, 3.5% raises. So by adopting the system, it does not add $1 to the cost of our labor. So it doesn't change anything. It just gives our system more flexibility and the ability to pay people for their performance. And that's the system I think we want. If we don't, we can scrap both systems and just go to everybody gets a flat increase. And I think that eliminates any type of motivation whatsoever for an employee. And they can just come to work and put in their time and do their average day's pay, and that's it. So, but that would be simple. So I think this is the system we're trying to go to.
Derek, please.
Tim, did you?
You know, I kind of agree with some of what John was talking about, but I think you're going to open up a can of worms here. I've been around a lot of employees at an employee level, and when they hire on to a position or onto a job, and they've been there for 1, 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years, they're looking for that carrot at plateaus. You got to be real careful when you start taking that away, because you'll have the total opposite effect of what you're trying to achieve because they don't understand it. Okay? Been there, I've done that. I've had to do things like John was talking. We went through and did the flat line pay, but what we did for incentives is we set up some profit sharing programs. And we put some incentives out there for the employees at every level, not just this level, this level, all the way across. And we put together committees that would sit down and meet once a month. And if you had particular employees or particular whatever that could or did exceed whatever you wanted them to do, it was on a profit sharing basis or an incentive basis that way, or a structured bonus system. It didn't affect the pay, but it's like me, if I went out here and I put up 10 more walls than this guy over here did, then I got compensated for it and nobody else did, which is part of your incentive program. And that's what incentive means. I think if with this process here, I think there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be taken for granted. The way this is structured, maybe somebody might think it's a given. I've seen that with employees.
Maybe I think what is a given?
When you just say, okay, well, we're gonna cut out these
different levels, and we're going to do this, this, and this, and we're going to give 3%, 4%, 5% rate increases across the board or whatever, according to what your plan is here. I think you're going to get a lot of things that are going to fall through the cracks, and you're going to get some people that may or may not be deserving of that, and you're going to have people that may deserve a little more than that.
And that's where the merit pay comes into effect, is that individuals will be awarded for their individual job performance. There is no guarantee of a 3% increase. Mm-hmm. It is based on job performance and where their pay is at in relation to the range of pay that's available for their job. So it would still be very much a performance-based approach, which should serve to motivate and incent employees, given that their performance dictates their pay, whereas in a true incentive program where you're looking at, you know, a bonus or a profit mm-hmm. sharing, it can be a little bit more difficult to see how does an individual's behavior and performance link to those results and rewards. So that's why we're advocating for an individual performance-based mm-hmm. approach with a merit system.
And I can, the 7, 15, and 25, that was, I don't know how, when that was adopted, I mean, way long ago, but it was originally intended to be a kind of a merit, you know, so because we're a small organization, we don't have a lot of opportunities to advance to a higher position. And obviously we have people that fill positions for a very long time. So that 7, 15, and 25 was to give, and if you got your 7-year, you didn't get any more money, it just, you moved up into a grade, so you expanded your potential. So you didn't get anything for it. You just got more potential for it. But what it turned into was an automatic. Well, I've been here 7 years, grade increase. I've been here 15 years, grade increase. I've been here 25, grade increase. There was no review. It just became automatic. Mm-hmm. And so what we have now is we have certain positions that in the market, if I was to fill that, I would be paying probably 50-60% less to fill that position. And so what that has done, if someone's been here for 25, 30 years, it has skewed that number so dramatically that there's no way to reward that employee because they're totally out of the market.
And we did an analysis, too, for the current cost of the length of service increase policy. So given employees' current tenure and the current pay structure, the annual cost of that length of service increase policy is $99,000 per year, and that is just in base pay.
Director Connie, then. Director
Kim. Your comment about the column of bonus and the fact you didn't use it, I think it fogs the issue of even having it in here, and I challenge you why you put it in there.
More, we always, I guess, assume more information is better because there are some positions where there are larger bonuses and it does impact total cash compensation. So it just provides additional information to see how might those other positions be compensated if they were bonus eligible.
But then you left some out. If they didn't give a bonus, you left them out instead of averaging in a zero. Is that right?
The annual bonus is just non-zero values, yes.
Well, that's not really indicative then. If you're looking at an average situation, you ought to be averaging the zeros in too.
Well, with a few of the resources, they do not provide bonus information, so adding a zero would not actually be
in our case. I think it fogs the issue, and it's best not even be in here because we're not given
it doesn't change anything. It's not going to change.
No, but it's just a confusion factor that we don't need to have.
We can take it out.
I'm done, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Only because I said on the original committee that, like my first term, and when we changed from the old system, I believe it was really archaic, and it really needed a good overhaul. We've come light years to where we are today, folks. So that's indicative. I'm trying to get keep good people and get new people and to try to make this right. So to me, this is what we're looking at here is very similar to the federal system today where you got step-tier programs in a percentage range. It makes everybody equal. You work hard, you get a little bit more, you work less, and you just get your paycheck. Guess what? That's what you're going to get. You're going to sit there. It really, to me, is very close to that. My question is, we're going to eliminate all these things. That's all predicated on going to the system. Is that correct? All limiting the 1525 7 year mark, all those things, and we're going to the 17 pay grades, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and have no effect on the budget. How much effect do you feel from your market analysis is going to affect on getting new people? Because right now, I don't think we have a problem getting people, good quality people, to work for this organization.
I think it should actually help attract new talent, because essentially it's putting jobs that are in line with the market. Like I had said before, some of the jobs had fallen out of line with market, and so I think this should help ensure that your rates are market competitive when you're attracting new talent.
That's all I got.
Rick, please.
I got a question. I don't know what your benefit package is. I really don't. Is it average, good, bad for your benefit package here? Because
average with insurance. I mean, average is not sick leave and vacation might be better, but insurance might be worse. And
because if you want to attract good people,
it's very good.
This is what I see. I've got 500 employees, and this is what I see. I probably bring in 1,500 to 2,000 applications a year that we see. The biggest thing that they ask for is benefit. So my question here, if you want to attract good people, you want to attract solid people, people that want to go up and be career-minded, maybe instead of doing this, you look at something in a benefit package incentive.
This is separate from benefits.
I don't know. They're just trying to equalize all the pay grades at this point. That's a whole different world.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you on that, too. It is, but they actually have a really good program here.
Okay.
Because I helped design it, too, as well. And what they're trying to do is equalize it for everybody mm-hmm. and allow it to be just equal across the board. Allow staff to go. They've done a good job and give merit increase that's appropriate for that individual. So,
well, recruiting new people is important, but my biggest concern is making sure that I'm rewarding the people that I have. And we've got some excellent people that do a lot of work above and beyond the call of duty and save the district thousands just because of who they are and their professionalism. So that is my goal, is I want to have the ability to reward good employees. And if you are an average employee, and that's fine. That's who you are, and you can do your job, and you know what? That's great. But we do have some excellent people, and I want to have the ability to they should be rewarded. They should not be treated just like everybody else. At least that's my opinion. We could go back to the old system, and probably it'd be fine. And we could go to crash them all and just go to a flat, and that would be fine. But I don't think we've got better people than that. And so I want to reward them. And this does that.
Rick Stone?
Thank you. Having been through the federal government career, my first career, where you could just become old and get rewarded by length of time, and you've heard the term dead wood in the government. Us being a government situation, it's not that case. And this helps with a lot of things, and eliminates the fact that you sit in position and get your pay raise forever. So it's a step in the right direction from, you had mentioned whatever government agencies, I don't know if that was federal government, it was part of the study as well. That system is going to change, and it should change a lot. But I think this is a good move. Keep in mind that the phase-in time is the 15-20 by December 31st. 2017 and 2020 is a 7 year mark. So that takes into consideration whatever employees out there might be affected over the period of time.
Is that why it went to 2020 on the 7 year?
So in 2015 or the 15 and 20, 25 year, there's only, I think, one in each of those categories, but there's 12 employees that are real close to getting that 7 year. And I thought, in fairness, let them have their 7 year increase, but then after that, it's just that. So
then there isn't as much of a financial impact
the seven,
by
right.
only having the one pay grade increase
right.
versus the two pay grade increases and the three at the 25%.
Right, right.
Any additional questions? We can have a motion.
There's a couple other things. You said there are 68% of the employees will get an increase, 32% will get a decrease. Is that right?
I had said that 68% of jobs would have a higher pay range, and 80% of employees would be eligible for a merit pay increase in the new pay.
But they'd have to earn it.
They would be eligible.
Eligible, not automatically given.
Correct.
Earn it.
Yes.
Could you, what was the first one number?
68% of jobs
would
have a higher pay range.
And therefore 68% of the employees, or?
No, 68% of jobs.
How many employees? I guess I'm trying to figure out how many of our employees are going to get an increase, how many are going to get a decrease.
80% have the potential to have a merit increase. No one's pay will be decreased as a result of this program.
Nobody?
If their pay is above the current or above the proposed range for their job, their pay would be essentially red circled, and so their pay would remain the same until the pay structure moves upwards to the point where then they're eligible again for merit increase.
And so the total money spent for salaries and so forth will be how much increase?
There's no set increase because it's all merit-based.
It'll be based on their appraisals, the employee's appraisal for career. So there's no increase until they
there's
perform.
There's no automatic increase.
But potentially there would be jobs. There would.
Yeah, but potentially it could be the same as we've seen over the last 2.5% the last 2 or 3 years. That's typically the average. That average won't change, probably. It'll probably still, I'm still going to average probably 2.5%, right?
So
but some employees may average a little more than they have been because of the system there.
So at the end of the year, the total number of dollars spent for salaries for the NRD people will be the same, essentially, except for
this year.
What about next year?
But, and then, like, again, we'll be able to base off what those appraisals will come out to be.
The appraisals done by you and?
And the supervisors. Each employee has a yearly evaluation.
Okay, one more question, please. How do you fit in this contract?
I don't. I'm a contract, and so I serve at the pleasure of the board, and then once that contract is renegotiated, then that's where my pay comes in.
So you're the only one that is exempt.
John, can I add one more thing?
Sure.
During the evaluation, John endorses every individual personnel. He signs off on all the evaluations. If someone should fall in that redlined area where they fall over 120%, their salary will stay the same, but they'll receive a merit increase by a lump sum, and that's based on our pay program administration manual. So just because someone falls in at over 120%,
they still get something.
They still get something.
Okay, so you're saying nobody's going to go backwards. Everybody's going to get at least what they've got.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
We're not proposing taking anything away.
Okay. I thought you had mentioned 32% of the people are getting a decrease.
I misunderstood that.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's going back.
What you said, and I thought that'd be a lot of unhappy people.
Yeah. No one's going back.
I can manage that.
So everybody will still be fairly across the board. Okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should state what the 32% related to.
What was that, the 32%?
He mentioned that.
Yeah, you said that there was a 68%, and then you said a 32% would actually be decreased, what you'd said when you first started talking. I wrote it down. I wonder what that came from when you started.
I do not have a 32%.
You have 68 and 80, that's what I remember, but I don't know.
68 and 80% was referenced.
I've written down that I thought a number of people might get
calculated.
It would affect their pay scale. That was my question.
Any additional questions? We can have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Their motion to approve staff recommendation. Roll call.
Jeff.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Aye.
Was that before this meeting?
I think that is the personnel, as I say, Public Affairs Subcommittee. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move right into the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting. Let's see. We have, is Patrick Leahy here?
No, he's not.
Okay. Tim Fowler, will you fill that vacancy? Okay, thank you. A copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted on the back of the room, and with that, quorum call, please.
Fred Conway?
Here.
Fowler?
Here.
Caesar?
Yeah, here.
Thompson?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
And I'm here, too.
I'm sorry. Leahy? And John?
Yes. Next item is item four, the adoption of the agenda.
So moved. Second.
Roll call, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yeah.
Thompson?
Yes. Yes.
And
oh.
Fred Conway.
I jumped in. That was me. I have here an affidavit of publication that will become part of the permanent records of tonight's meetings. So now moving to item six is review and recommendation on bids for 2018 district vehicles and equipment. Nicole Gust, please.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm here with the review and recommendation of bids for the FY 2018 district vehicles and equipment. The district placed three items out for bid. One new 2018 crew cab, four-wheel drive heavy half-ton pickup truck, and two new 2018 SUV all-wheel drive vehicles. Formal bids were advertised two consecutive weeks in the Omaha World Herald on September 14th and September 21st, and specifications for formal bids were mailed to 35 local vehicle dealerships. Bids for both items were opened on Friday, September 29th at 2 p.m. in the district office. Bid item A. This truck will be replacing the district's 2011 Chevy Silverado 1500 with almost 136,000 end-of-year miles. For this item, we received four bids, and the staff recommends that the low and best bid of $21,246 from Gene Steffi for one 2018 Ram 1500 crew cab be accepted with the trade-in of the district's 2011 Chevy Silverado 1500. For bid item B, there are two vehicles. These vehicles will be replacing the district's 2010 Ford Escape with 121,500 end-of-year miles, as well as the district's 2013 Chevy Equinox with over 185,000 miles, end-of-year miles. For these items, we received three bids, and the staff recommends that the low and best bid of $49,196 from Gene Steffi for two 2018 Jeep Grand Cherokees be accepted with the trade-in of the district's 2010 Ford Escape and 2013 Chevy Equinox. As you can see, the actual lowest bid, which was also from Gene Steffi, was for two Dodge Durangos, and this did not meet our specifications that we put out, as our bid specified a minimum of 8.4 inches ground clearance, and the Durangos have a ground clearance of 8.1 inch. As noted by the dealer and acceptance. As you can see, what the board approved for our budget and what the staff recommends for the purchase of both the crew cab and the two midsize all-wheel drive SUVs, the staff recommendations for purchase is quite a bit lower. And so the staff recommendation is to accept the low and best bids for items A and B.
Okay, Chair, to entertain a motion on this item.
So moved.
Okay. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Seeing none, directors. I just want to comment on the checks today. There was a vehicle that had 140,000 miles on it that we had to put $8,000 into. And I don't remember what the type of vehicle was. It'll be in there when you get okay. to the checks, but you know sometimes we get caught when we get up in these higher mileages, and so it's a. But we've studied this in the past, and I think we've done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Roll call, please.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conway?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes. Thank you. Now we'll move on to item 7 is programs on the Big Papio Levee Culverts Phase 2 Rehab Project. That's the interlocal cooperation agreement with the City of Omaha. Martin Cleveland, please. Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm going to go to the maps first, Phil. Last summer we talked to you about this project, and it's actually these pipes are in two different maps. I'll show you the first map, which is on the board right now, and it's in Sarpy County. Get some to work here. Well, anyway, it's Course Road near the top of the photograph, and then there's 370s near the bottom half. There's 16 culverts, and these are in the ones in Sarpy County. Go to the next map, Bill. These other pipes are located in Douglas County and Sarpy, mostly in Douglas County. So the little red dots are actually the culvert locations. So back in July, you approved a design contract with FIRA to design these improvements. And of these structures, due to past agreement with the City of Omaha, some of these structures are actually owned by the city. If the culvert actually goes back beyond the levee, ties into a storm sewer system in the city, we consider it to be a city culvert. If it just goes through the levee proper, it's a NRD culvert. And so of these 16 culverts, there's actually 6 of them are in what we consider to be city-owned structures. And so we've been talking to the city about these culverts, and the logic of trying to repair these together as one project, like we did last time, because it makes sense to bid it out as one project as opposed to multiple projects. And we control then the design and the construction so we fit the Corps of Engineers' criteria. So the goal here is to make sure we're fitting that criteria that exists out there. Go to the next table. So these projects that we have before us, the overall project cost, and it's the bottom half of that sheet, which you can move that down a little bit, Bill, is $2.6 million. And so of that, the city's structures, the 6 structures, are roughly $1.3 million if you look at the engineering and construction together. Go to the next sheet, Bill. Thank you. So these culverts, if you look at the cost, $1.3 million, there's actually an optional and a required portion of each structure that's a couple of culverts in the city's ownership, because if the section that's in the creek actually in the levee is required, we need to do that portion. This portion beyond levee is kind of optional, and so the city opted to not do one of the optional pieces. So the overall project costs, their share, it was $1.18 million. And talking to them about cost share and how we did projects in the past with the city and other local entities, typically the city has ended up paying, the local entity pays 40% and the district pays 60%. So based upon that percentage, if they paid 40% of the cost, they would be paying $472,031.76 over 2 years is what they proposed. They have some bonding limits per year, and so there's an issue of paying it back all in 1 year, but construction won't occur till 2018, probably going into 2019. So fiscal year 18 and 19 fiscal years actually work okay. So the overall amount of money is shown on this table. And then following that is the actual contract. Maybe go back to the memo at the front, Bill. Again, I might point out the district's required under the our car share program with the Corps of Engineers to actually fix these pipes. We don't have any choice. If we want to stay in their 84-99 program, which is basically it's a insurance policy. If we have a flood damage to the project, the Corps will actually pay 80% of the project cost repairs on a non-federal project. So it's a pretty good insurance policy, but we have to adhere to their requirements, which basically means maintaining the levees and maintaining the culverts in a good shape. And, of course, as a good sponsor, we want to maintain the culverts anyway because they're a liability for us if we don't fix them. We have a hole through our levee that's basically going to create a problem. So that's kind of an overview of what we're proposing tonight is basically for the city to cost share. They've agreed to these numbers, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have regarding that.
Would you clarify before I ask for a motion on the table? Are we only approving the city cost share, or are we also approving the overall project tonight?
The overall project, only you approved to date has been engineering, and what would happen is at some point you're going to approve bids for the construction. That's not going to occur till like July, so you have final authority at that point. If you decide that, hey, this is, we can't afford it, it's like twice as much as engineer's estimate, we can't afford it, you always have that chance to opt out of that. So this agreement only occurs if we do go ahead with the project. So if you don't go ahead with the project, basically nothing happens. And so that's the only way it would work.
This is a cost split, basically.
This is interlocal, yeah. Okay,
thank you.
Yeah. Move staff recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson?
So of the 16, this is only six of them.
Six of the 16. The other 10 are our structures, the patio structures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then the BPL 15 and A and B?
Those are a twin structure.
Huh?
That's a twin structure. There's two pipes together in the same location.
That's in Sarpy County.
It's in Sarpy County. The reason for that one is it was built as part of the sanitary sewer project. So they actually go underneath the sanitary sewer. And so the city, after some persuasion, they agreed that, yeah, this is ours because it was built as part of the sewer. So
good.
We had to work at that a little bit, but they agreed to it.
All right. Anybody else have a question? I've got one for you then. Have you been successful at slip lining a number of these, or what is a typical repair that you do to these?
The last project which the district just finished in the summer, last summer, was, which would be 2017, in other words, was 13 structures were replaced or lined, and of those 13, I think 10 of those were actually lined. The other three were actually brand new, you know, pipes in that location. So it works well. It's the proprietary name is called Snap Ties. It's kind of the brand name you hear a lot, but it's basically sliding the plastic pipe inside of a rusted out metal pipe and then grouting between the two pipes and making a composite pipe out of it. And it works well when the pipe is perfect. You know, if you don't have a perfect pipe, sometimes you got to work at it a little bit. But the overall project was very successful. I think the 13 we did was very successful. Didn't have to cut open the levee in a lot of cases, which is great. You know, you keep your levee intact and didn't impact any of the traffic and other things that may be over top of the levee in some cases. So it's really the wave of the future. I think you're seeing, much like you see with sewers in cities, they both use in situ form, which is basically a liner. They do it all trench. They do it underground. They don't have to cut open the ground surface, which is less invasion for the public that use the roads. Kind of same concept with levee. Try to keep the levee in place, keep the protection in place. And so Marla and I sleep better at night when we don't have the levee open up. You know, it's opened up, it's not very pleasant. Even with a ring dike, you still have a risk of the thing failing. So.
Thank you on that, Martin. Sure. Any other? Director Thompson, please.
One more professional engineering comment. Flex seal tape, come on. Isn't that going to work?
Flex tape? Duct tape?
Flex tape, you know, the guy cuts a boat in half and throws a tape on water.
We might want to try that.
No?
We should probably try that and see what happens.
Anybody have anything for the good of the order?
Director, I just have a question. What type of savings do we have over the liner versus replacement?
You know, we've asked Spire that question in the past because they did the design for us, and you know, I think the cost is a little bit less, but not significantly less, because you look at the cost of I think a lot of times it depends on what's over the top of the pipe. If it's really difficult to open it up, then it's cheaper. If it's just a simple opening in a levee, then it's probably not much different in cost, but it's less invasive to the levee. You know, the levee isn't being breached basically when you put a pipe in, so we think levee's better off if we leave it alone, you know, as far as actually opening it up. But cost-wise, we're probably not saving a lot of money, maybe some, but not a lot. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Austin?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. Now moving to item 8. Is Amanda Grant and review and recommendation on interlocal agreement with the City of Papillion for the West Papillion Levy Accreditation. Amanda, good evening.
Hi, good evening. We're going to talk about levy accreditation again, or a different set, a new set that we haven't talked about yet. Over the years, You remember the district helped the Village of Waterloo accredit their levies, helped cost share with the City of Omaha while they're currently working on accrediting their levies. And then, of course, we have our 613, 616, our Missouri River levies. That's an ongoing project. And the accreditation really means meeting FEMA requirements to show that the levees provide 100-year flood protection. And so maybe, Bill, if we go to the map, this time we're going to be talking about the West Papillion levees. And they were, let's see if I can. They're on the West Papillion about 42nd Street up to about 90th Street. And those were built in the 1990s, and when they were built by the district, and they were built to have to protect for the 100-year flood event and provide 3 feet of freeboard, which is that's the FEMA criteria. And then, if you remember, in 2010, but years up until then, we had been working on a new flood study for the West Papillion Creek, and the flows were just much higher in the West Papillion. There are a ton of urbanization in that basin. You know, that's Papillion and Elkhorn and West Omaha. And so the flows were significantly higher, and that meant that the levee did not have enough freeboard. And so what happened at that time was they had to be mapped. That area, that stretch, had to be mapped as if those levees were not there. So you can imagine that, you know, a really dramatic increase in floodway and floodplain through this area impacted a lot of property that was kind of slated for development, also just a lot of residences, a lot of properties. So since 2010, we've been operating with that flood map. And as you know, the district hired Fire Engineering to do a new hydrology study as part of the whole Papillion Creek flood mapping project that we've had ongoing for 11 years. And when they did that, when they did that new hydrology study, some areas, not all, but some areas saw lower peak flows, lower 100-year flows, and that was the case in this stretch on the West Papillion Creek through here. So that the City of Papillion, you know, had seen that initial information, and they knew that meant that maybe there was a chance that these levees could be brought back into compliance, or accreditation is really what we call that. And that they, you know, initially there had to be so much work done to raise the levees and to fix some raise bridges and do a bunch of things that, you know, it kind of seemed like that was such a large project. Well, now with some lower flows, along with Prairie Queen, Dam Site 15A, WP 6 and 7, those flows have come down, and the work seems like it would be, you know, quite a bit less in order to bring those to be able to accredit them. So the City of Papillion has met with the district, and they've contracted with Fire Engineering for phase one of this. We're calling it phase one of the levy accreditation. Really involves, so also the same on R16, R616, 613. It's not just the elevation of the levees that make you be able to accredit it. You know, there's new seepage requirements in the geotech, and there's environmental considerations, and there's kind of some new criteria that you're dealing with. So this phase one involves a levee inspection to get some more survey data, some better, you know, actual data on the levee, geotechnical analysis and design, a look at hydraulics, and an environmental assessment of the area. So the interlocal agreement that's included for your consideration tonight sets it up that the City of Papillion would contract with FIRA, that the NRD would be the technical support agency, meaning that we would really handle the technical aspects of the work with FIRA Engineering. They also would like us to receive the invoices first and review them for accuracy and all of that, and then send them on to be paid by the City of Papillion. And then we would reimburse the City of Papillion 50% of the cost. So the total phase one contract is $334,304. The district share would be $167,152. And just so you're aware, this phase one really will tell us what needs to be done in order to accredit the levy. So, you know, if all of that is favorable, and we would, of course, provide a report to the board, but if all that's favorable, you really would expect other phases to come down the road if this was a potential project. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I'll chair to entertain a motion on this item.
I'll move on to staff recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors?
I have a question. What would be the next phase then? You think going into the next phase, would that be some sort of...
I would think phase two would probably be a design of what... There could be a little more analysis depending on what we find, but I would think phase two would be, you know, what needs to be done design-wise to bring the levee into
because we're sure
the ability.
This point is not it wouldn't be a good...
We think that there's probably some of freeboard issues, but not feet anymore, like inches. So that's what it looks like now, but they'll have to survey. You know, we have... you know, LIDAR data, which has a little accuracy of half foot here and there. We need actual survey data to compare all that. But it looks like freeboard, some small freeboard issues would be necessary. The geotechnical, we don't know for sure it's not good, but the standards have changed. And I think what we found in the levee system is that there's probably at least some amount of work that would need to be done to address seepage.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Deezer?
Yes.
Johnston?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. Now moving on to item 9, it's Eric Williams and the 2018 Long Range Implementation Plan. Elwood, good evening.
Good evening, directors. The Long Range Implementation Plan is one of the planning tools that the district updates each year to help us understand the financial situation. And specifically with this document, it's a look at the current budget and then a look at the next 5 years in terms of projected expenses, revenues, staff hours, and just general projects and programs that the district is undertaking. It's a relatively long document. Most of the pages of the document are the written descriptions of the different projects and programs that the district has ongoing. And so we update those if there are significant changes to any of the projects and programs that we've got going. But in general, most of those stay the same as a lot of the work falls under existing categories. So if we scroll down to page 2 of the document itself. Yep, so table of contents, we start you kind of see an introduction to information about the district at the beginning, and then starting down about page 13 is when we get into the programs and projects. At the beginning, we updated the list of directors, a few staff changes, so that information has all been updated. As far as the programs and projects, there's a few of the categories that are kind of larger areas that we spend a lot of the focus of staff time and district budget on. The project maintenance for channels and levees and dams, the Papillion Creek Tributaries Project. Those are kind of some of the big areas where a lot of the work that we talk about often at the board meetings falls into those categories. So channel stabilization, as well as structures that are into the Papio Creek watershed. My own personal area of interest, the Trails Project, is down there in number 43. Those are some of the larger areas. Omaha levee certification, again, is a large area right now. But budget kind of changes on each of these areas based on the particular projects that we've decided that we're going to move forward on in any particular fiscal year. So that's most of the pages of the document. You can see down at the back we have tables. And if we skip down to table 1, I think we'll take a look at those briefly and then talk about any questions from there. So page 35, I think it's table 1. Back a couple more. Okay. Yep. So, okay. Yeah, table 1 is land rights. This is for the current fiscal year, and so this is pulled directly from different line items in the budget. It's a projection of different types of property rights that we'll seek to acquire over the next fiscal year. There's a large category there for WP6, as well as ZB2 and the Missouri River Levee. And then the Missouri River projects, there's funding for land acquisition in a project that Jim Bisek oversees there. And so there's several large land acquisition budget line items. Those were presented in each of the budget drafts and then approved in September. And those have all been copied forward here to outline kind of the general idea of the land rights over the next year. Table 2 is the personnel needs. Each of the five tables are specifically covered in the state statute that instructs us to complete this plan. So a breakdown of the personnel needs is by work months. And so this is got the same list of programs and projects numbered, and then the estimated staff hours that go towards each of these. So you can see that where we spend a lot of the actual staff time, both in professional office staff time as well as field staff time. If you look at the bottom of that table, it's about 650 work months, which translates to about 12 months a year, about 50 employees, which matches roughly what the total number of full-time employee equivalent is that we have in the district. So that's where the total breakdown of staff time comes from. Table 3 is the current fiscal year breakdown by different categories of expenditures. Personnel, operating, professional services, land rights that we covered in Table 1, and then construction and cost share. So again, there's a couple items that are a significant portion of the overall budget. The grand total on the right column at the very bottom matches the current fiscal year budget that was just approved last month. So if you look at that total in the right column, again, channels and levees, Papillion Creek Tribs project, the levy certification, ZB2, those are pretty significant portions of the overall budget, WP6, 7. All of those are active projects that have significant financial commitment in the current fiscal year, and that's reflected here. One specific note here is that what we have called the Papillion Creek and Tributaries Project, in this version of the LRIP, includes the six priority projects that are currently under preliminary design, working towards 60% design. And so all of those are currently accounted for in the Tributaries Project line item. Usually when those move forward and have a more specific timeline for final design, land acquisition, and construction, we'll break those out. So you can see Prairie Queen, 15A, WP6, 7, ZB2. Those projects were all preliminary design in the TRIBS project and then broken out to their own project number and line in the LRIP when they move forward to a more more specific timeline for construction. A few of the items that are in this table and program and project descriptions are still here from past projects that have roughly been concluded. And since they were a significant portion of the budget in the past, we left them in to reflect that, for example, WP5, Prairie Queen, and 15A are very large projects. They had a significant impact in the overall budget and the future projected expenditures and revenues. But Prairie Queen does not still have a tremendous impact in our budget. So in next year's LRIP, it will probably be removed from the table here, just that in this year, since it was so large in the past, we still have it shown, so it doesn't look like it disappeared for no reason. But we will remove projects that are no longer active from the table as they get concluded. Table 4 is the projected expenditures by those same project and program and project numbering for the next 5 fiscal years. So the first column matches the total column from the last table. So that's a duplication of those same numbers. And then projecting forward the expected expenditures on different major program and project areas for roughly the next 5 years. Some of these items have specific amounts that we do project we will be expending based on long-term commitments, interlocal agreements, or other studies, construction projects. Some of them are based on estimates compared to previous year's expenditures carried forward. So, for example, the cost share programs all have an expected amount that would be spent per year based on past year's expenditures from the budget, but it's not currently outlined. There haven't been any projects specifically committed into those categories. Again, the number 4, the Papillion Creek and Tributaries Project, that one does have a little bit more specific projection, and so we have a little bit more detailed numbers in that. And again, that includes future work on all 6 of the priority projects that are currently in process. And then again, you can see 15A wrapping up this year, 6 and 7 and ZB2 moving forward with final design and construction on those, as well as the Missouri River levy certification. So those are some of the big areas of the budget that we saw this year and that we'll see again in the next couple of years. If we look down at the very bottom of that table, just one other item to discuss. The last item is the bond payment. And so that's payment back for the bonds that we took out for WP5, Prairie Queen, and 15A. And so we have a known payment for that. And that has actually come down over the last few years compared to what we had projected based on refinancing those bonds. So we've done well, and we have actually seen a pretty good savings from the refinancing on the bonds compared to what we had previously projected we would see as an expense in the future. So that's shown some good savings for the district. And you can notice from the bottom that the projected future budgets are, again, decreasing over the projected next 5 years. And that's based on completion of some significant projects. Again, some of those major structures as well as the levy projects should see a continued projected decrease in overall budget. And that's what we saw from last year to this year. And that's what we're expecting over the next few years as well. Those numbers do sometimes come up as additional funding sources become available and additional project work comes up. And so this, again, is a planning tool to give us an idea of where we are generally going with the budget over the next few years. But again, it does change year to year based on the annual budget drafts that are presented and then the final budget that is approved. Table 5 is the projected revenues for the same five-year period as the projected expenses that we just saw. It's broken down in kind of more of a category breakdown rather than the specific programs and projects. The top line, it starts with the cash on hand and then bring in the property tax and then add in all of the revenues in different programs and projects that we have. All of those numbers, again, come from the current budget. So anywhere that we have specific information about revenue streams that would be of note to some of these programs and projects, that appears in its own line item. There's then a smaller number at the bottom for other district, other projects, small projects. So we do have some revenue that is smaller from other things that isn't specifically line itemed out here. The projection for revenues is firm in some areas, but not guaranteed in other areas. So we do have funding sources that come available to us. Water Sustainability Fund, for example, is an application and is not guaranteed. And so some things that might come up in the future that might have an impact on the timing of some projects may not be reflected here because we don't have a specific commitment of the funding at this time. So if something shows up, it gets incorporated into the current budget that's presented each year, but it might not appear in the five-year projection because we don't have a firm commitment on some of those items. So that's kind of a rundown of the different parts of the plan. We refer back to this at different times throughout the year to help us understand what overall direction the district is moving based on the mission and the objectives that you guys have outlined for us. We take this and submit it to, I think, five different state agencies for the state statute, and then they file it. And like I said, we pull it out and use it for different planning operations throughout the year. And I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have about the descriptions or the different tables and funding breakdowns that we have.
First, I'd like to get a motion on the floor on this item.
Most recommendation.
Thank second. You, Director Thompson. Is there a second?
Okay.
A second by Director Fred Conley. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors. I'd just like to comment. This is a good long-range plan, but this by itself doesn't authorize any project. They still come back to the board for authorization, and even though we throw something in here, it's what we think, staff thinks, is likely to occur, but it still comes back to you for the final approval.
Yeah, and through a couple different mechanisms, both through the annual budget review, where each of those line items are reviewed and approved, and then also through individual project approval at monthly board meetings. So yes, this is a guiding tool that helps point us in a direction, helps us understand kind of what projects we can begin to take on with community partners, but does not bind us to any particular activity that has not already been committed through other board action.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Director Jeff.
The Missouri River levy certification, there's a lot of money this next year for that. Is that right?
Yes.
And then a little bit less the next year, a couple of years, and then nothing. So we're hoping to have it all certified by that time?
Yeah, that's, I guess, Marlon or Paul would probably be the best ones to answer that. That's Jeff.
That's correct.
Okay.
In 2.5 years,
it would be complete.
Our big cost this year was land rights.
Is there a lot of cost share with that? Versus?
Yes, and that's shown on the revenue side.
Okay.
Where you have City of Omaha, City of Bellevue.
They're all sharing that.
And
there it is.
And state. Okay.
And state.
So how, what percentage of it do we end up paying? Do you have any idea?
We had about $20 million from others, and we're have the rest. So we're less than
20%.
Okay. Thank you.
Should not include water sustainability.
No, we have no.
Director, I'm sorry, the direct appropriation.
Yeah, we have a director appropriations from the state. We have our own fund for that project.
Okay.
To draw from.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, includes.
Well, the 20% includes that.
Yeah. So we will pay about 20% of the project.
Any other questions or comments?
Rob.
Director Thompson.
Yeah, I'd just like to echo what you said. It's a great plan. We've followed this for how many years now? And obviously, it's a flexible document and variables such as if we ever got bonding authority for the state of Nebraska, that could push a lot of these over to the left side to get done. Our sustainability fund is probably not going to increase, but we'll be submitting applications accordingly, but may swing one or two projects left or right, depending on what it is. Thanks for working on it. Good job.
That is a reminder of one other note, that the revenue table does still show revenue from bonds on both WP5 and 15A. I'm sorry, it has a line item for those, but it doesn't actually have any revenue from the bonds. 15A is showing all of that being brought into the budget this year and expended because the project will be completed before the end of fiscal 2018. So that falls in the category of what was formerly a very large item in the revenue table, and we didn't want to just remove it without an explanation of why that disappeared because it had such a big impact in overall operations. But, yeah, there is no revenue shown in either of the two bond locations. All of that will be completed this fiscal year and is not currently projected to show any more revenue in the future.
Thank you. Any other comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Rice Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Caesars?
Yes.
Yes. Everybody get their name called?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Now we move ahead to the West Douglas County Trail, the NEPA Engineering Services Agreement.
Somehow I would say that this project is even more complicated than all of the LRIP on its own. So this is, we've talked about this one a number of times in the past. The West Douglas County Trail system has been referred to as Phase 1 and Phase 2 in the past. Through ongoing design discussion with what is now the Nebraska Department of Transportation, not roads, Department of Transportation, we've come to some design modifications. Those design modifications work backwards into a change in what's called the purpose and need, which is essentially the very top line on the front page of the NEPA environmental document. And so a slight change in design has triggered a change in that line, which triggers an entire new application for NEPA. And we went back and forth with Department of Transportation and the Fed Highway Administration on that, and the conclusion was that the change in the description of the project, formerly between the City of Valley and Waterloo, now that we are not going to be building the section, the divided section along West Maple, instead the project will tie into the northwest corner of Mallard Lake. That change changes the purpose and need of the project, which means that that entirely new environmental document needs to be submitted. And that was, of course, outside of the scope of what had originally been outlined for the consultant, FHU, in their work. So FHU put together the scope and fee for a new NEPA document to be submitted based very largely on the documentation that has already been done. There is some field work to be done, new wetland delineation because the old one has expired based on the time that's been spent on this, some public engagement, but then using a large portion of the description of the project back into the new document. We are in process and waiting for updates day by day from the state on when we can proceed. The CWO is functionally a change order for the consultant, and that's the next page of the attachment. We received that from the consultant. We signed it and sent it to the state, but that was on the end of September. There's a short window at the end of the federal fiscal year, about October 1st, where What they tell me is their electronic system for obligating funding goes down and does not come back online. So we are currently waiting for the federal electronic system to come online so they can click the button, authorize the funding, and then write the notice to proceed date in the lower corner of this document so we can tell the consultant to go out and start the field work. When those documents arrive, we would then sign that agreement and that resolution. They'll look very similar to the past agreement and resolution, but we don't physically have those documents yet. They can't send them to us until the federal computer gets turned back on, maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. So they'll be here very soon. But that's why we have the consultant work order and the breakdown of the fee and the scope, but we don't actually have the resolution and the agreement document attached to this memo this evening. So we're being very innovative to keep things moving because we need to have field work done for the wetland delineation before November 1st. Otherwise, we have to wait until the spring, so it would be something like a six-month delay to get back to the field to do the wetland work so that we could then file the NEPA. So we are aggressively moving forward in all of the creative and innovative ways we know, and we're going to make sure that that gets done, and we do not put a six-month delay on this project for no reason. So when those documents arrive, we will sign them and get things moving forward, pending approval.
Staff recommendation.
Thank you. And is there a second?
Yeah.
Director Teaser seconded. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yeah.
Johnson?
Yes.
Chris Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Thank you. I believe that concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
We'll call the meeting of the FEL subcommittee to order. Director Bradley is absent. Fred, would you be nice enough to fill in? Thank you. I'll call the meeting to order at 7:41. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted on the rear door and outside. With that, quorum call.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Here. John Conley?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Lees?
Here.
And Chairperson?
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
I move. Second.
Roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Lees?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes. I have before me the proof of publication of this meeting. Item 6, review and recommendation of refinancing 2013 Flood Protection Water Quality Enhancement Bond Series 2018, Partial Advance Refunding Series 2013, John Winkler and Paul Greiger, D.A. Davidson & Company. Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me this evening. As many of you might recall, earlier this year we refinanced a majority of the existing 2013 bonds, Series A and B, saving the district over $2 million in interest cost. And at that time, there was approximately $8 million of bonds that didn't make sense for refinancing. Because of the way the bonds were sold, the interest rates at that time on those maturities, had we included that $8 million in the refinancing package earlier this year, it would have cost the district money. So since then, two things have really happened. We've seen a slight decrease in interest rates, and the other consideration here is that if the district were to sell fewer than $10 million of bonds in 1 year, we can designate them as bank qualified, which usually allows us to obtain slightly lower interest rates. Probably, a lot of people say maybe 20, 25 basis points, depending on the day. So what we're proposing to do here is to come back and clean up that outstanding $8 million. We would attempt to sell those bonds here in December and close them the first part of January using the district's bank-qualified $10 million cap, or part of it anyway, for next year, 2018. And that's the opportunity here we've seen. When I contacted John, I thought we could probably save somewhere in the neighborhood of $350,000, $400,000. Interest rates have faded off just a little bit. If we went to market today, we'd probably be closer to $300,000. But we still think it's a viable opportunity, and that's why we're here tonight. If there's any questions, I'd do my best to answer them. Yes, sir.
Is the $300,000 that's after your fee?
That's net of all expenses. Yes, sir.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
Move staff recommendation.
A second?
A second.
Thank you. Does anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? Rushes. Seeing none, roll call.
Well, this is just an obvious way to put money back in the district's pocket instead of paying it out in interest, and I just encourage the directors to approve this.
What is the interest?
The district is currently paying on these bonds. On this particular series or this term bond, we're looking at just over 3%, 3.12%. And we're thinking right now if we went to market, we'd be closer to 2.6, 2.7. So the interest rates are so low right now. I mean, if we go through the paperwork and we try to do this and there's no opportunity, at least we tried. We'll keep it on the shelf and we'll keep our eye on it. But it's 3% money. We're just trying to squeeze some additional savings out of it for you.
And you're going to lower our line item in the LRIP a little more.
We'll do our best. We'll work with the other guys.
Have Eric adjust it again.
That's right.
Any further questions? Seeing none, roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Weiss?
Yes.
Fred Thompson?
Aye.
Matt Comey?
Yes.
Andrew? Yes. Seeing that there is no other business, we stand adjourned.